It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast. Okay, we're joined here today with somebody from North Valley Mutual Aid. We're going to be talking about the aftermath of the campfire, which in reality is actually still burning. Before this fire hit, there was a housing crisis in Chico, and I think that kind of will kind of lay the groundwork for a lot of what we talk about before. But can you just describe that crisis?
Chico is it's a college town in the Sacramento Valley of Northern California. It's about 90 minutes north of Sacramento. And we're pretty much surrounded by a lot of rural area, a lot of agriculture, a lot of small rural and farm and mountain communities. Paradise was a smallish town of about 25,000-30,000, I think. A lot of low income folks, a lot of elderly. It was sort of like a retirement home for a lot of people. Paradise being about 10 minutes drive up the hill from Chico, a lot of our friends and neighbors and comrades lived there, worked there, and vice versa. So it's pretty, you know, it's a pretty tight community. Chico is it's like a lot of college towns. It's pretty liberal, but being surrounded by so much agricultural community, it's definitely got a lot of conservative elements to it as well. And then as far as your first question, so Chico, like I think most places that I know about around the country is experiencing a houseless crisis. We have a lot of houseless people living on the streets here. And the city and the county are pretty hostile to them. Chico's kind of going through some growing, or was going through some growing. I'm not sure what its future is going to be after this. That's a big part of what we're doing here on the ground. But definitely there's the idea of like trying to grow Chico to be a lot more business friendly and hip. And there's a lot of, you know, kind of Portlandization trying to happen here of the place. Homeless people, houseless people are, for most people, they're an eyesore. There's something to try to get rid of. And so a lot of us have been, working on that issue here for a long time. And with the crisis unfolding as it is, we just got, tens of thousands of displaced, newly homeless people here in Chico. A lot of those people had means. A lot of those people had, friends or family, or were able to rent places or get out of town. But there's a really large section of people that didn't have that option. And so a lot of folks have probably seen the videos of the tent cities that have been springing up all over town. Most famously, the Walmart parking lot was a really huge central location for folks with nowhere else to go. And, for the first few days, it was kind of amazing to watch because it was really mutual aid in action, just people kind of stepping up and setting up kitchens and setting up medical and setting up food distribution and taking care of each other and, putting up shelters. And there was a lot of, weird elements there too. A lot of sort of, you know, opportunistic and predatory elements to that. But in a lot of ways, it was really, really cool to see people coming together. And for a lot of places, people, that was, you know, there's no place else to go. The shelters are full. And for a lot of people, just aren't even an option, you know, if you have pets or if you, you know, or if you just don't really want to be confined into a, you know, authoritarian, you know, structure like the shelter system that they have set up. A lot of those shelters, you've probably heard of having infectious disease breakouts. So there's lots of reasons why someone maybe wouldn't want to go to a shelter, especially if they're talking about like now busing them, you know, an hour out of town or more. And so we are actively supporting those people who, you know, are making those choices, because it's not ours to make. But if they are deciding to stay, then we want to help support them, especially if the resources that were there are being taken away. Like the county came and sent all the medical personnel home and dismantled the medical and first aid tents. The food, it's mostly gone, although it seems to, you know, people come back and bring that stuff periodically. But most of the donations, you know, it's been, they're trying to dismantle the camp. And so, you know, we also have, as you probably know, a storm heading our way. So that's really going to change things for folks outside and for everything that's going on.
Right. Let's just back up a little bit. So the town of Paradise, you said it's about 30,000 people.
It's less than that. It's a 20 something thousand. But yeah, with the, you know, there's a lot of surrounding area too that was
totally devastated. I mean, some of the numbers on this thing are just incredible. Just how, you know, fast it went. But I mean, this area is just, you know, melted.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to wrap your head around how enormous it is. And I think a lot of us still haven't even really done that, especially folks that lived through it, you know. And when you're talking to people about it, you can tell it's just like this really, the enormity of it, I think, hasn't really sunk in. The town of Paradise and the evacuated areas are under a pretty severe lockdown. You can't really get in there to see what happened. Yeah, they've got the National Guard and cops and, you know, people that even that you, if you own your home up there and you're trying to get back there, they're actually arresting people that are trying to go home and see what's going on up there.
So you can't actually go and, like, I know a lot of people want to go and, like, sift through the ashes and see if they can find anything.
Yeah, that's not going to be happening for some time. You know, I know that there's people that have supposedly gotten in through back roads and whatnot, if you've got, you know, some heavy duty four wheel equipment, but you're not getting in through the main roads at all. Wow. They're locked down. And so not a lot of people have actually been able to get back to see the devastation, but, you know, so a lot of stuff that we're hearing is pretty much rumors and, you know, news footage and whatnot. But, you know, there's over 1,000 folks missing.
Yeah.
And it's pretty hard to believe that more than a small minority of those people are going to be found. I think that the devastation is really going to be quite shocking.
I mean, even that number itself, if you're saying it was 20,000 or so people that lived in the town, have they accounted for everybody else that managed to get out? Or how do they come up with the number that there's 1,000 people that's just based on reports that people have made?
Based on reports and 911 calls and Red Cross lists and things like that. So it's pretty, you know, it's pretty unexact science, you know. And truthfully, with the rains coming, you know, a lot of that forensic work or whatever you want to call it of finding people, because they're basically charred ashes at this point, is going to be gone. And so I think the numbers probably never really going to be known. But regardless, you know, the devastation is it's like I said, it's still hard to wrap your head around it.
Now, so the fire started on the 8th, and then just this Sunday, another big moment was that supposedly the Red Cross was going to shut off the shelter at Walmart. That hasn't happened. It's moved into the adjacent kind of field next to Walmart. I'm just curious, was that just an organic thing that happened, that people just went to Walmart because they knew that maybe you could I know most Walmarts allow you to spend the night in the parking lot in the car. People just kind of showed up there, and then it just kind of grew on its own.
That's my understanding. I don't know that there was any, you know, like call out of people together. Right. There's if you drive around town, there's this sort of tent cities kind of all over the, you know, in a lot of the big box parking lots. There's a fairgrounds here, and all over the racetrack is just, you know, tents and people set up. So it's really, they're really spread out. The Walmart one was the biggest one at one point, and now it's, you know, it's much, they've dispersed quite a lot of people from there. A lot of people have left on their own, and a lot of people just, you know, were intimidated away. But you know, as I've said, we're supporting the folks that do want to stay. Folks were out there all day with pallets and tarps, just helping, you know, people that are going to stay be prepared for the wet weather that's coming up. You know, making sure that people have their needs met out there.
Based on what you know, if let's say you were a person that lost everything in the fire, if you were going to go to FEMA, or they have these disaster relief centers, they're calling them, what would you actually get from the state? Like, what kind of benefits would you get
from FEMA? At this point, I'm not aware that FEMA's even. I know they're here and they've set up, but the last I heard was, you know, maybe at this point people are getting in to talk to them, but I don't think anyone's getting anything from FEMA as of yet. I think they're just taking people's information at this point and telling people to be patient and, you know, our hearts are with you kind of thing.
But patient for what?
In theory, they, you know, they have the resources to put people up in homes. They have supposedly, you know, these trailer homes that they can bring out and put in, you know, but at this point, like I said, the town of Paradise is devastated. So it's like people aren't going to get trailers in their homes anytime really soon. So I'm not sure what FEMA is promising people.
So you haven't heard anybody. I mean, nobody gets like assistance or basically everything people have gotten is just through mutual aid. There hasn't been any sort of government support, essentially.
I'm not aware of that. There's mostly been through, you know, some sort of mutual aid, either through shelters, which a lot of them are church run. Some of them seem pretty well run and pretty, you know, pretty open. Others seem a little more strict and authoritarian. Some of them are quite funky. Some of them seem to have a lot of resources. And I'm not really sure how that's working. The Red Cross is running some of them. They have their way of doing things. Most people kind of know about. And, you know, they also, the Red Cross has been around trying to take over shelters that were already up and running by mutual aid. And either have them shut down or just take them over. And I think people have pretty much fought them off on that.
Can we talk about that a little bit? I mean, because I know that some of the people that you're connected with have been out at Walmart. I mean, obviously they've been seeing this. And this was on all the news reports. I mean, this has been on TV. It's been reported on the news. This isn't just like hearsay. But I mean, you know, people from what we've seen, and we've reported this on IGD, but the people that were on the news were just like, where are we supposed to, like, our house literally just burned down and now they want us to leave Walmart. Where are we supposed to go? So I'm just curious, you know, what are everyday people that have lived through this, what are they saying about the Red Cross trying to move them on?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, where are those folks supposed to go? No one has an answer for that. I mean, there was people there saying like, oh, there's shelters in, like I said, in Gridley or Yuba City, which are pretty far away. And no one really, you know, who are these people that are offering rides, number one? And what are these shelters? What am I supposed to expect when I get there? And, you know, like, this is my, you know, a lot of these people, it's like, this is my community. This is where I want to be. I don't want to leave. I want to stay here and, you know, get home, you know, find a job, be around my friends and family. So that's not really a great option for a lot of people, especially with all of the just unknown variables around it. So it's kind of not surprising that a lot of people, I mean, there's definitely people that have gone and wanted to go, and we support them as well. I mean, if that's your choice, then for sure. But no one should be, you know, forced into that, making that decision for someone else. Sort of looks like, so it looks like the conversation seems to be that there is a definite police presence. It looks like they're just trying to be intimidating, but at this point doesn't look like they're actually like actively trying to evict folk. So
it fucking assholes, man.
It might just be the tactic, which I'm pretty sure will be just like, yeah, if we make it intimidating enough, maybe these folks will just leave on their own. To speak to that as well, I think one of the reasons that the Walmart parking lot is being focused on at this point, a lot of people are saying, you know, because it was always like the most, you know, like the poor folks. It was like the most kind of marginalized and vulnerable folks that made it out there. And I'm hearing a lot of talk from people outside saying that, or people reporting back from the place that, you know, it's most of the evacuees are gone. Now it's just like regular old transient people. And there's a real discriminatory thing happening here where people are looking at the newly evacuated houseless people as somehow good folks, but the folks that have been on the street before this disaster happened are somehow bad folks and don't deserve support or don't deserve any help. And, you know, obviously we disagree with that.
But, I mean, you don't find that to be true, right? I mean, it sounds like there's actually quite a few bit of people that are basically that were displaced from the fire that are still out on the streets, right?
Oh, most definitely. You know, but it's also not something that we're doing, going around trying to, you know, right, ask people. They're, you know, we're not trying to vet people where, you know, are you newly homeless or are you, you know, it really doesn't matter if, you know, the thing is like somehow, you know, this disaster has brought out, you know, this thing in people where they want to help. They're like, those are fellow people that, you know, are going through something hard and we want to be there for them. We want to help, which is beautiful. But at the same time, they're looking at this other, you know, the most vulnerable part of our community and dehumanizing them and saying that somehow that they are not and they are the other and not worthy. And, you know, in our travels, it's like if we have blankets and jackets and we see someone who's cold and needs a blanket and jacket, we're not going to ask them, you know, their story. We're going to give them a blanket and jacket. And that actually bothers a lot of people.
We want to thank each and every person that has recently donated to the It's Going Down Winter Fundraiser.
And before you even knew what you had, you patented it and packaged it and slapped it on a plastic lunchbox, and now you're selling it. You want to sell it. Well,
because of your support, we are now halfway to meeting our goal of raising $10,000 by the end of 2018.
You think that kind of automation is easy or cheap?
So, if you want to support Revolutionary Autonomous Media, please don't hesitate to log on and donate.
Access main program. Access main security. Access main program grid.
You didn't say the magic word.
Please! Hate this hacker crap!
And donating is easy. Just go to itsgoingdown.org/shop and sign up to become a monthly supporter. Grab some awesome swag or make a one-time donation.
Hold on to your butts.
And now, back to the show.
Well, I wanted to ask, now, you know, there's been both in the situation in Southern California and in Northern California, there's been stories that have come out that have said that electrical utility companies like PG&E may have been connected to the fire. I mean, there's been a lot of aspects to the fire itself, if you haven't been following it. But, you know, for the past couple of years in California, there's been a massive drought. Also, there's this bark beetle that's been infecting trees that have led to, like, tens of millions of trees that have literally died in the forests of California. And, you know, which contribute as well. Also, the, you know, what's basically winter now has been very dry and it's not been humid and there's been a lot of wind. So all of these things put together have basically just led to literally a perfect storm. And it seems that there is evidence that there was some sort of fire, or the fire may have been started by PG&E. I'm just curious if I know that PG&E had a meeting in Chico and people came and heckled them and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the meeting, but it sounds, definitely reports are that PG&E had issues out there and that they knew about them, and they happened. I think there was more than one issue actually at this point that they're talking about, but it sounds pretty much like, yeah, it was started by PG&E having some bad equipment, electrical equipment, some of the more rural areas, I guess. Yeah, you know, I mean, PG&E, you know, they're a corrupt monopoly. And, you know, this is not the first time that this, something like this has happened, and PG&E has, you know, looked like the culprit. And, you know, the powers that be bail them out every time, and it looks like they're being bailed out again this time. You know, when the news of this happened, I heard that, you know, PG&E's stock crashed and they were, you know, losing tons of money. Shortly thereafter, you know, someone from the governor's office basically gave them a pardon, said that any litigation that happened, they would help pay for. And so their stock is rising again. So,
you know, Jesus. Wow.
Yeah, you know, but you know, the bigger picture is obviously there's something happening to our climate. I mean, California this year, the entire state is on fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pretty much everywhere you can think of, from the, you know, the southern tip to the northern tip into Oregon, was burning at some point this year. Like, the entire fucking state was on fire. So that's kind of new, and it's middle of November, and we've just had the biggest, fucking most destructive, deadliest fire ever. You know, that's new. This stuff just keeps happening, and you know, something has changed. You know, something has tipped. I think that this year was definitely a tipping point as far as looking at climate change and the disasters that it's going to be bringing to this part of the world. It's already been happening in other parts of the world, and we're not seeing it. So it's like, oh, that's just something that's going to happen maybe in 100 years, but it's happening now.
Is that part of the conversation you find when you talk to people about this?
Yeah, you know, it's not so much on the forefront right now. I think right now the conversation is mostly about, you know, like the enormity of what is happening right now in our communities and just, right, you know, the immediate response. But you know, it's definitely on people's minds, I think. And I think we'll be hearing a lot more talk about that.
I mean, I know I've asked you this before, but, you know, how are people feeling about Trump? I mean, he famously came out and said, basically blamed, you know, park management on California. This is, you know, this is literally a couple of days after the midterm. So many people felt it was like a political, you know, backhand. But, you know, implied that it was California's fault. And then, of course, people pointed out that, in fact, you know, the majority of the forests are federal forests. They're not state forests. You know, the firefighters union has come out and basically told Trump to go fuck himself, essentially. I'm just curious, you know, is there a big backlash to Trump? Or there was an article that was in I think the Washington Post or the LA Times, talking to some people from Paradise, some Trump supporters or people that had voted for him. And they were, most of them were just saying, like, you know, F this guy, you know, he's a piece of shit, you know.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, he out of the gate, he offered, you know, no sympathy or condolences to anyone. He just made that, you know, another one of many stupid comments. There's probably a fair number of Trump supporters, especially like in the Paradise and, you know, more rural communities. Chico's like a little more liberal, but definitely has its conservative side as well. As far as that goes, though, like, I mean, you know, I personally just ignore the fucking guy. But truthfully, that meme about, you know, forest management, we've been hearing that all year here in California. Like every time there's a fire, it's because the liberals and their environmental protection acts and all these, you know, things, while they might be, you know, well-meaning, they're just misguided and we need, you know, better forest management. That's the reason why. And, you know, it's sure there's a certain logic to it. If you cut down all the fucking trees, you won't have any forest fires. But, you know, obviously that doesn't seem to be a great solution from my point of view.
No, and I mean, you know, scientists have been saying this for a long time, but I mean, you know, if you manage forests in a way that basically is always trying to stop fires as opposed to letting small ones burn underbrush, then you're going to continuously add to a situation in which a big fire will pop off and it will just burn out of control. And, you know, obviously forest management is a part of that. But, I mean, you know, the idea that people are going to run around and rake, you know, all of California's forests is just ludicrous. And
they might use leaf blowers, but not rakes.
Yeah, I mean, I think a bigger thing there is, you know, setting things up to, you know, sell off a lot of the national forests. And
that was exactly my point. Yeah, that's their agenda for sure.
Right, and you know, there's active tree sits going on right now in California, Northern California. In fact, not even that far from where you all, there's a new part of the tree sit in the Mattole forest, which is more towards the coast and like the Humboldt County area, is ongoing. And they actually just released a report from their new tree sit that they started, you know, mentioning the fires and, you know, being in solidarity with everybody.
Most definitely, and much love and solidarity to everyone out in the Mattole right now.
What are people doing? Anarchists, anti-authoritarians, how are they organizing up until this point?
When you know, the scope of what was happening became emergent, a lot of folks around the Blackbird Collective, you know, knew that we had to formulate a response. And interestingly enough, just 3 weeks before this happened, we had hosted the Mutual Aid Disaster Relief Tour. So 3 weeks earlier, we were sitting around Blackbird, kind of workshopping, you know, a grassroots community response to exactly what we're seeing right now, you know, an autonomous direct action, mutual aid, solidarity, not charity approach. So when this actually became emergent that this was a disaster unfolding in our backyards, we actually had some of those tools in our pocket. And so we're grateful to Mutual Aid Disaster Relief for coming through and sharing their skills and their knowledge with us. And we basically took their playbook and adopted it for ourselves. So we're basically operating under their core values. And we had a call out for folks that wanted to organize. We got a ton of folks coming out. The first night was basically just getting the discussion started, but the second night we immediately started forming working groups, and we've been spending the last week in those groups just sort of like finding out, you know, what's happening on the ground and what people are needing and what people want to plug into, and getting people involved. And it's been pretty inspiring and humbling to see our community rise together like this. Yeah, and so we've got the Blackbird space is sort of a central hub for organizing. We've also been donated as a space with a commercial kitchen, and yeah, we have a Food Not Bombs team in there that are going to start. We just got into the space, so we're going to start cooking starting tomorrow, pretty much every day, and going out with foods. A lot of folks have been, as I said, at the Walmart and other tent cities and shelters around town, just plugging into those places. We've got a childcare group that became active just autonomously. Folks are trying to figure out one of the big things we're trying to figure out right now is how to get people plugged in, especially folks that want to come in from outside of our area, because we're getting inundated with solidarity from all over, and it's really wonderful and heartening. But we want to make sure that we're able to facilitate that and figure out where, you know, we can get people that are going to make that effort and make sure that their time and their skills and their energy are put to good use. So that's a big one for us right now. And also just sort of, more outreach to the actual affected people. Not to say that we're not all affected, because everyone in this town is affected. I mean, we haven't breathed clean air for weeks, and everyone knows someone that's been personally affected, if they haven't been personally affected by losing their homes or losing their job. You know, much love and solidarity to everyone who has reached out to us. We have a fundraiser going. We have a GoFundMe site. That's a great way for folks that can help us out. We're going to be working with Mutual Aid Disaster Relief to get a wish list out there for people to donate.
Okay, we are talking with somebody that is on the ground at the encampment that's growing outside of Walmart in Chico after the campfire has happened on November 8th. You just want to introduce yourself real quick?
Yeah, my name is Marin and I live in Chico. I'm a community member and an organizer, and here organizing with my community and folks.
Awesome. Well, just kind of take us back to the start. This thing has been growing for a while. How have things changed? They started off, and then a week ago, it seemed like the Red Cross or supposedly somebody else was going to like remove the encampment. Just take us back to the beginning. How have things changed?
Yeah. I mean, what's changed is people decided that some people are worthy and deserving of resources and support, and other people's aren't. And that's been not necessarily a change, but people acting on that really, like, pretty disgusting opinion of, you know, separating folks based on worth and unworth. There's been a lot of actions to change who gets what. And so on the ground, that's looked like, you know, right after the fire, it was people fleeing that really set up this camp here, evacuating from Paradise and Megalia and the surrounding areas and parking at Walmart because it is on the way down from that mountain. And as people started gathering here, like even that first night, there wasn't resources, right? And I was at one of the established shelters helping out there, and immediately we're like, oh my God, all the donations and food and resources are here, yet there's all these people at Walmart and Lowe's and Sears with nothing. And so we immediately saw that gap and started driving donations from that shelter out here. And over the next couple of days after the fire, there were a lot of donations that were getting to Walmart. The word got out that, you know what, a lot of people are landing here, so we're going to bring resources here. So the next few days, that built up. There was a Red Cross tent, a medical tent. There were a bunch of food trucks here giving out. It was entirely like free market, pretty much, of different. There was a phone booth, massages. And then there was a group of community members who kind of took it upon themselves to organize and coordinate. They described themselves as they were all on a soccer team together. And one day at the camp, a sign popped up that said, "This camp will be closing Sunday at 1 p.m. We want you to be safe and warm. If you need transport to another shelter in Gridley, just ask." And so the first thing I thought when I saw the sign is, who is writing it? Who are we asking? And how are they getting there? Because a lot of these people don't have cars or the resources. And so in talking with those folks, immediately the strongest, most vile opinions were coming out of, well, we were trying to do this nice thing, but then, you know, we don't like all these people that are coming and taking these resources. Like, these are only for, you know, a certain type of worthy, like, displaced and a worthy houseless person, but not other people. And so they had announced, because they wanted to, pretty much, that this camp was closing. That was a decision that was, like, some of the volunteers started posting signs. And then they called the city and got the city with them. And between the city and Walmart, everyone was like, okay, we're going to close. And we don't want the spotlight anymore. Like, we're backing up. We don't believe in the worth of all people. And so immediately things shifted. The cops enforced and the city enforced all vendors leaving. So that means all of those formal booths, all the food trucks are gone, the medical tent's gone, everyone left besides us, right? As soon as that announcement happened, there was a lot of folks in the community that were like, oh my God, these people, like, there's still houseless folks, people displaced by the fire, people who need to stay dry and warm, and if the government's going to abandon them, like they always do, then, like, what's going to happen? And so as those resources left, North Valley Mutual Aid has put up a few, like, large carport tents, and we still receive donations and food and are pretty much just, like, I'm here going, we just talk to everyone, and it's largely just, like, hey, what's going on? Like, how can we... while you're here, what do you need? And so that's been met with a lot of opposition from the city police, from the city council, from Walmart. We've had council members out here telling us, whoa, we don't want people here. We need to ship them away to Gridley. And if they don't want to go to Gridley, then it's their own fault. And that's ridiculous. Gridley, just for context, is about half hour or more away. And a lot of folks here, you know, have family in the area, just lost everything, don't want to go where they don't have a car and transport, and are in trauma and shock. And so our big thing is
so
what do folks need, not what we want to throw at them.
Right. So just to be clear, last Sunday when it was reported in the news media that the place was going to shut down, this is the encampment. It was basically inside the Walmart. There was just rows and rows of supplies, free food, clothes. That was because they were basically afraid that other poor people or other people that were already displaced were coming and, you know, quote, taking advantage of the supplies.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
And so, yeah, after that announcement, the police and the city and Walmart have been passing the baton of blame and responsibility, and the city was enforcing, and then we're kind of like, oh, maybe we should back up, we don't really like how this makes us look, and pass it back to Walmart. And Walmart's hired a private security team that's armed here 24/7. They shipped in people from Texas, Arkansas, and Washington, and they're harassing folks, and they're here trying to stop donations from coming in. So we've had to sneak in a lot of supplies. Like yesterday, I was arguing with a pair of security guards who were stopping a man who had driven up with a truck full of hot Thanksgiving food, and he was like, "You can't give out donations here. You gotta leave. You can't give out this food." You know, we're just running around trying to be like, "Hey, don't listen to the security guards. Bring us food, because you know it's cold, it's wet, and everyone, no matter what, deserves, you know, to have food, to have housing, to have healthcare." And yeah.
That's disgusting. Yeah, I mean, we looked up the company today. It's you know, rather slick, big multinational. They have their hands in a lot of different places, but so they're actively, because I mean, so just so we're aware, are people still in the parking lot, or they have moved the lot next to it is kind of like an empty kind of field. Where are people at now?
Yeah, both. So there's some folks and campers still in the parking lot, and then there's this large lot that we're all set up in, that's adjacent to Walmart and owned by Walmart. And we have four like tents full of supplies, and we're constantly getting more and giving out more and feeding folks. There's been a lot of midnight crisis of hypothermia, and we've had to bring a couple people to the hospital, but we're trying to deal with all that and keep people alive. And Bronson's Asset Protection is the security company that's come in, and if you ever want to see like just the most staunch, awful, accurate representation of capitalist logic and like racist, just violent logic, right, that's at the root of our society, you just see these guys walking around. They're in these big vests, and their vests literally say asset protection. I protect capital and goods over people, which is true for all police, right? Like, our entire system is based on the idea that capital over people, right? And we don't like knowing that. We don't like thinking about that. But come and hang out down here in this lot for a day, and you will see people with big vests that say asset protection blocking food, hot food, that's just for folks from coming to the people that need it, right? And like,
right. And to be clear, I mean, most Walmarts are known for allowing people to camp, you know, overnight in their parking lots, and I would assume this one is, you know, it's legal to camp overnight in that parking lot.
Yeah.
I mean, not to get caught up on the law, but I mean, just to, you know, make that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know exactly the different laws. I know that regardless of the law, these people have a right to,
right,
like, survive and try and get the resources they need. And like, you know, we're all about trying to like help people get what they need instead of telling them what they need. And as long as people like need somewhere to be, we're going to make sure that they're there with the supplies to stay warm and fed. And yeah.
How many people would you say that are in the lot, like camping out in tents, and then people that are still kind of in their campers and stuff?
It's largely tents at this point. I'm just stepping out looking at it. I don't know. There's maybe like 50 different, well, let's see, 20, 40, maybe like 50, 60 tents. And each of those tents usually has a few people in it, you know, a couple or people rooming together in their tents. We brought out a bunch of pallets because that one of the first nights of the rain, I was here all night, and folks were just getting soaked and getting hypothermia. And so we've tried to elevate the tent some and resupply different things. But yeah, there's probably about 50 tents, and the campers have gone down just the last couple days. I think they've finally gotten, you know, the gas money or fixed what they needed fixed and found somewhere else to drive it to. Part of it is a lot of these folks are like Paradise and Magalia, and this whole area is like folks don't have backup plans or resources. Like, it's poor communities and vulnerable communities that like already have been screwed over by the government and by capitalism, and yeah, don't have a lot of options or a lot of trust in the system, right? And for good reason.
Well, I mean, not to go off on too much of a tangent, but I mean, is there a lot of talk about, you know, for instance, PG&E's role in the fire, or for instance, when Trump came and, you know, kind of did his weird, I mean, is that even on people's minds because of everything else, or?
Here in this camp, it's not on people's minds. But I mean, personally got a flip off Trump. It was on my mind, but, that visit was just a joke to most, like, people kind of like, I need to meet my basic needs, and I don't, you know, like, a lot of the puppet show of government and shit is, like, the last thing people are thinking about right now.
Right.
But, I mean, people know what's going on. I met a lot of really, really angry people while he was in town. A lot of people didn't want him here. I mean, yeah, people definitely know what's going on and are pissed off about it, but, like, we only have so much energy, and he's not worth an ounce of that energy, really, you know? Like,
right.
And, like, he's part of a larger fucked up system, and all of our energy is going towards trying to change that really, really violent system that he's a part of, right?
Yeah.
And he's just a puppet of it.
Well, what can you say about the camp itself? How is it organized? You know, is there like pieces of infrastructure, or is it just tents? Are people getting together and like making decisions together, or what does that look like?
Yeah. So the tent itself, it's a lot of, so the infrastructure is pallets, and people have kind of claimed different areas and spread out. And then, folks within the community, there was a lot of, within the camp, a lot of people were asking for, like, a central space, a space to continue to get resources, to have heat, to get information when they need it. And so a group of us came and built up these more permanent, they're not that permanent, but they're stable on pallets, in the ground, carports that don't get wet and don't get, and we're staying here until folks say otherwise. And so that's kind of the infrastructure. We have one tent that's full of all the clothing and blankets and toothbrushes, toiletries, tampons, you know, all the supplies people need. And then we have another one that's kind of our kitchen tent. And then we just set up two more today that, because there's been a lot of, you ask about decision making and how we organize, a lot of this is emergent. Right. So it's like, oh, this is very clearly a need right now. How do we immediately like adapt and respond and like meet this? And so, you know, last night and the night before, the emergent need was, oh my gosh, people are getting so wet and just need a place to be. And so we've brought up two more tents, or the carports, that will have heaters and chairs and pretty much like a heating station, because last night, you know, we need to bring people in, take off all their clothes to dry off and get dry, so they didn't get severe hypothermia. And so that's kind of how decisions are being made, is everyone's talking to each other, and there isn't like a communal decision-making process. It's the reality of being in this camp is it's really cold and it's rainy and it's windy, and so everyone wants to be in their own tent, right? And that's one of the big barriers to service, into getting services, is everything that these people own is in this tent, and it's awful outside, and they're tired and worn out and don't want to leave their tents, right? And it makes so much sense. And so, you know, we're trying to interface and make sure people can get their needs met, even if they can't leave their tents. And so, you know, it's been a lot of going door to door and making sure that there's not someone being lost and fallen into the gaps that our government lets lots of people fall into. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, beyond the encampment, I mean, what else is going on in terms of the town? Do you know? We've heard that there are other people camping out. There's other shelters that are going on. We heard that also these shelters are closing this Sunday. Is that true?
Yeah. So there's some different shelters in town. The different ones, there's barriers to access to all of them. But, yeah, there's kind of... So there's like three, I think it's right now, there's three Red Cross shelters. All of them, let's see, today's Friday. Today, Azad's shelter closed. Another Red Cross shelter closed today. Another large Red Cross shelter is closing Monday. And that leaves, I believe, East Avenue Church is not run by the Red Cross. So all the Red Cross shelters are closing and leaving by Monday at the latest. And so everyone right now, all the focus government-wise is shipping people to towns half hour away with large fairground shelters. And that just doesn't work for a lot of people. But every time I've had city council members come up here and be like, hey, we're just trying to help, like, we don't want people staying here. What can we do? We want them safe. And I'm like, great. Like, let's try and meet their needs. How can you help us, like, make good shelters here for them and give them access and, like, listen to their needs? And they're like, well, what I really meant was we want them to be in Gridley. And can you help me get them there? I'm like, well, that's not how this works, right? Like, if that's not going to meet their needs, then why are we going to force people to go? And there's been a lot of pressuring and a lot of passive aggressive posturing, and you know, it's just the government is failing in a lot of really big ways, as it, you know, or more so it's working in the way it was designed to leave poor folk, other folk, like, you know, to leave people with disabilities, to leave, you know, groups behind, right? Like, that's our government works only for a very small group of people.
Right. So you mentioned that the shelters are closing down, the Red Cross is packing up. I mean, I'm still kind of at a loss as to what services beyond that the government is offering. I mean, if you're somebody that lost everything in Paradise and you walked into a disaster relief center that they set up, I mean, what do they have to offer you? I mean, are they offering you... Basically, it just sounds like here's a free bus ticket to go sleep in a shelter in a different town and, like, good luck with your life.
Yeah. So I personally haven't gone through the process. From what I've heard from the people I've talked to is you go in, you wait several hours in line. First, they try and register you with FEMA. You can't access a single service at all if you're not registered with FEMA anymore. And that requires, like, a physical address, which pretty much makes it difficult for any homeless person in Paradise, Magalia, in places that burned to the ground and they still lost everything, you know, to access resources. But anyway, so you register with FEMA, and then once you've registered with them, that will begin a process that requires you navigating all the bureaucracy that you could ever imagine, right? So you have to call your insurance and call, like, someone has to go out to your property and evaluate it, and then they have to determine, so it's pretty much like proving that what you've said is true, proving the worth of the things. They'll help you, they do At the Disaster Relief Center, they do help you get like replaced documents. So if you need like a driver's license, birth certificate, death certificate, different forms, I help you get those if you've registered with FEMA. And there's, I think eventually, the idea is that eventually the people who have registered, who have successfully navigated these really, really complicated bureaucratic procedures, like everyone I've talked to is just having the worst time trying to figure out how to actually get these resources. But in theory, down the line, once they've proven everything, I think there'll be different like grants and vouchers and some type of something. It's not clear, right? Like, I think a lot of people here don't know. But in terms of immediately, there's been some emergency shelters. Those are closing. But there is some processes in place for folks to eventually get more resources. But some of that's not entirely clear. A lot of things are being met by community members organizing for community members, right? Like, come stay at my house. Come, you know, let's get you rides to where you need to go and get you clothing and what do your kids need? And, you know, it's been a lot of people showing up for each other, not FEMA.
Right. I mean, it's just so disgusting. I mean, you're right. When the cameras are ready to kind of leave, you know, then all the resources or all the safety nets. And again, like, you know, a lot of people, you know, will try to obviously reach out to family and friends. But I think, you know, the people hit the hardest are people that are very young or they're sick or they live on a fixed income or they're extremely elderly. I mean, those are people that can't be outside. They have to have some sort of support.
Yeah. I mean, even so, I'm at, you know, Walmart right now, and here, right, like there's a lot of folks who, you know, were living in mobile homes and that was all they could afford, or, you know, staying with friends up there and lost everything and just don't have the like network to fall back on, right, and don't have other options. And even when I was at one of the shelters for a little while, talking to some folks there, and it's like, you know, there's this one woman who's like 90. She was taking care of her husband full time because he was disabled and he had passed, and she, like, that was it. Like, she couldn't work anymore. She just lost everything, didn't have any other family. And it's like, well, what happens? And FEMA doesn't have those answers. Red Cross doesn't have those answers. What ended up happening for her is someone in the community came in and said, I have a spare room, you can stay with me for a couple months. And that's only a couple months, right? Like, there's a housing crisis in this country, and, you know, 50,000 more people just got added to that crisis.
Exactly. Well, in closing, is there anything else you want to say or ways that people can support?
Yeah, I mean, I think I really want to ask folks to think about what this crisis is, right, and really challenge notions of what people, human beings, deserve, right? And this crisis is houselessness and not having affordable, accessible healthcare and housing and food. And I want to see us organizing solutions to that crisis that include finding resources and responses to all those displaced by this fire, because these disasters, these natural disasters, are going to keep coming, right? Like, climate change is happening, and we have a system in the United States that already, like, leaves a lot of people without their basic needs being met. And as these natural disasters, you know, we see it with Katrina, we see it all across California right now, all with these different hurricanes, right? Like, there are huge amounts of people being added to this, like, giant crisis.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us, and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.